Hello, it's Monday the 11th of March. I'm Gary Bauman. On today's show, I'll be discussing the air travel recovery after the pandemic across the region with my guest, Singapore-based Brendan Sobey. So let's get started. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show. Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in. So today marks 4 years exactly since the World Health Organization, the WHO, declared COVID-19 to be a global pandemic way back on the 11th of March, 2020. We all know what happened next, especially here in Asia Pacific, where the impacts lasted longer than any other region. So where is the air travel recovery currently at, and what is the outlook for the rest of the year and beyond? To discuss these big questions, I'm delighted to welcome back to the show Brendan Sobey, founder of Sobey Aviation and one of the region's most prolific aviation analysts. Brendan was previously on the show way back on 7th of July, 2021, during those dark COVID days. So Brendan, welcome back to the Southeast Asia Travel Show. How are you doing and where are you right now?
Thank you. And it's great to be back. It's been quite a long time since 2021. Wow. I'm in Singapore now. I've been doing some travel recently. Just saw you in Kuala Lumpur a few days ago, in fact. It's great meeting you in person. And now I'm back in Singapore. And 11 March, by the way, it's a day I can never forget because it's also my birthday.
Well, double coincidence there. Yeah, as Brendan mentions, we caught up earlier in the week to try and put this show together. So let's hope we can remember everything we said. Let's start on that point, Brendan. It's 4 years since the borders closed and almost 2 years since Southeast Asia began to reopen after the pandemic. Now, I know it's a vast region with highly differentiated markets, but with the benefit of hindsight, how would you assess the overall aviation recovery at this point in time?
Well, it's really one of these like glass half full, glass half empty kind of things, right? Certainly, a lot of people were pleasantly surprised by the recoveries, but particularly in the first year or 2 years, how fast it came, and from an airline perspective, the financial recovery was for many of the airlines, at least in the region, not all. I mean, maybe get into that later, but it was better than expected. And that pent up demand obviously led to this situation where demand was well above supply, and that made for some good times for many of the airlines in the region. So, but now things have shifted a little bit in the last several months. We're seeing a lot of other challenges, and it's become less of a supply issue, and we're seeing more of a demand issue now, at least in some markets.
Yeah, one of the things I've liked about your analysis over recent months and the last 2 or 3 years has been that sense of realism that you bring out. And you recently posted about the regional recovery rates in terms of international versus domestic recovery, which surprised many of us, I think yourself included, particularly given where we were a couple of years ago. Can you kind of fill us in with that analysis?
Yeah. So initially, everybody thought there'd be a quite a rapid and full domestic recovery, just because people were traveling domestically kind of before borders reopened. It got a kind of a bit of a head start. In some countries, there was decent amount of domestic travel, of course, during the pandemic as well. People got more used to domestic holidays. There was a lot of new domestic routes, like new point-to-point domestic routes that were launched, especially towards the end of the pandemic, so there was a lot of expectation that, domestic markets would fully recover across Southeast Asia, because they were almost already fully recovered. And so the gap wasn't that high. That actually hasn't happened in all the countries, and particularly Thailand, Indonesia, and Malaysia hasn't had a full domestic recovery. Vietnam and Philippines has, although Vietnam has slowed down significantly. They were already fully recovered from a domestic perspective in 2022. And in 2023, they contracted slightly. In 2024, they are contracting further, actually, although they're still above pre-COVID levels, at least a bit. So it's really flipped around. It's quite interesting. And at this point, if you look at markets like Indonesia, Malaysia, and Thailand, it's hard to actually see airline capacity in the domestic markets coming back fully anytime soon. It could be years. It could be like a permanent shift in at least some of these markets. So that's something that's a trend that I think we're going to continue to follow internationally. In Southeast Asia, we're almost at 90%. You know, of course, it varies by market, but domestically, again, of the five main domestic markets, two are fully recovered, and the other three are well behind the international figure.
That's fascinating. So another story, big story, really, over the last couple of years has been the profits of the legacy carriers, some of which Thai Airways springs to mind, still in turnaround mode after their problems. You and I talked about before the show about this post-pandemic honeymoon period and in this regard, and alluding really to what you just said in the previous answer, is that honeymoon coming to an end overall? And how does it vary between different carriers?
Yeah, I think there's a gradual end to this kind of unprecedented condition in the market where we had capacity well under demand, particularly in the long haul market, and that's gets to the second part of the question. The biggest gap in terms of supply and demand, and where we've seen the highest fares and the highest yields, particularly in relation to what we saw pre-COVID, has been more on the long haul routes, and in some cases the medium haul routes as well. So routes going outside of Southeast Asia, or outside Asia generally. So in these airlines, the airlines that are more in the long haul market tend to be the full service airlines, the flag carriers, and some of these airlines, were not in very financially good state prior to the pandemic, but have been in a very good state the last couple of years. Thai Airways being probably one of the better examples. Thai Airways has had five consecutive quarters of profits now. And, if you have to look back over 20 years before you would see a period where they had even four consecutive quarters of profit. Thai Airways was always this airline that was, would make money some quarters, particularly the peak periods, but on an annual basis, wasn't really doing very well most years and had losses almost always during kind of the off-peak quarters. But all of a sudden now, they're consistently not only profitable, but very profitable. Singapore Airlines, of course, also has record profits. Singapore Airlines was consistently profitable before the pandemic, obviously wasn't during the pandemic, but post-COVID, the last 2 years, two straight years of record profits, so higher than any historical levels. Philippine Airlines also record profitability, both in 2022 and in the first 9 months of 2023. They haven't yet reported the full year for 2023, but it'll be similar. And Philippine Airlines making a lot of money on the U.S. Or North America routes, which traditionally has been, they're more lucrative routes, but, particularly so during the pandemic where the yields have just been so high, the competition has been so limited, and they've been making so much money. The rest of the network, it kind of doesn't matter. It's just enough to, make record profits, even if they only break even, say, in the rest of the network. And, I mean, they're doing pretty well overall, too. And some of these airlines, of course, had a restructuring. Thai Airways, Philippine Airlines both had restructurings. Philippine Airlines went through Chapter 11 process in the U.S. bankruptcy court. Thai Airways has bankruptcy court protection in Thailand. And it's a longer process. And with the Thai courts, in fact, they still haven't emerged yet from that process, although they've had five consecutive quarters of profits now. So some of that could be due to the reduction in costs and their restructuring, but a lot of it really is due to just the unheard of level of demand and yields, which creates this kind of honeymoon period where, I call it a honeymoon period because everybody knows it's not forever. So the question is, when will it end, and what will it look like once this honeymoon period ends, when we have a normalization in yields and, more competition comes back to the market and we have this gap between supply and demand, particularly long haul markets, which we still see today, close. And, nobody really knows the answer, but everybody would know that, the profits that we've seen the last 2 years from these kind of airlines certainly we won't see, forever. It will end. And, whether the profits go down a lot or a little, that kind of remains to be seen.
Yeah, that's great analysis. So it's nothing new to say that the operating environments for full service carriers and LCCs are different. That's always been the case. Has the pandemic changed that even more?
Certainly from a financial perspective, it has. I think the models are still pretty clear. there, you know, a lot of people talk about hybridization and closing the gap between full service airlines and low cost carriers. That could be from a product perspective, that could be from a financial perspective as well. In some cases, and in some regions like the US, we certainly have seen that. But I think here in Southeast Asia, it is very clear, you know, still, you know, but what we've seen is that the low cost carriers are in a financially weaker position. So it's still very clear. The models are still generally very clear. It's just that partly because of what I was just saying before, the real profits have been on the long haul market, which the low cost carriers don't generally play in. You've seen the flag carriers, even those that really struggled and were really kind of, the jokes around the world in terms of their profitability before pandemic, all of a sudden have some of the highest profits, not only in the region, but globally. And the low cost carriers don't play in that, so they haven't benefited from that. And also, the low cost carriers are mainly independent. You have a couple that are under the full service airlines, like Scoot, for example, which have the protection, the benefit of being in a very good financial position because they're under Singapore Airlines. But most of them are in this region are independent, and they were not bailed out or they didn't benefit from significant government support like a lot of the flag carriers were, and a lot of them didn't go through financial restructurings as well. Some of them went through kind of some out of court restructuring, some went through a little bit of court restructuring, but not the kind of restructuring or the kind of recapitalization that we saw with some of the kind of bigger airline groups that are full service airline groups, some with low cost subsidiaries in the group, but generally full service players. So these low cost carriers, are just financially now kind of in a weak position, because they first of all, they're in a weak position because they didn't kind of recapitalize and restructure or really benefit from the government support. So post-pandemic, they came out weaker than the others. And then, of course, in this last 2 years, they didn't benefit as much as some of the full service airlines in that they some of them might be profitable, but they weren't wildly profitable or had significant profits or sufficient profits to kind of cover the cost of all the debt that, or start reducing the debt that they kind of incurred during the pandemic. So that leaves us with a few of the kind of major LCC players in relatively weak financial position now in Southeast Asia.
Yeah, right. So stepping back from the LCCs and the full service carriers, a big topic over the past 2 years, I'm sure you've been asked about this millions of times in the media, has been airfares. It's been a major talking point for travelers, for the travel industry, and of course, those that report on it. How have the airfare structures evolved from, those real high points of late 2022? Are we seeing moderation, or again, is it really, really differentiated across markets and across the region?
So overall, airfares and yields have come down on a year over year basis. And we see that with even the Singapore Airlines more recent kind of yield figures. But they're still way higher than they were pre-pandemic overall. So they definitely peaked, in that first year and a half or so after borders reopened. And now with more capacity in the market, more competition, overall they're starting to normalize to some extent, but they're higher than, still quite significantly higher overall than pre-COVID. Now, there is a lot of variation depending on the market. We were talking earlier about just how big of a gap between supply and demand there has been, particularly in the long haul markets, and how high the yields have been in the long haul markets, kind of driving the profits for people like Thai Airways and Singapore Airlines and Philippine Airlines. So naturally, you see more of, you see that yield still being very high in some of these long haul markets, maybe not as high as they were, but still quite high. But regionally in a lot of the domestic markets, or kind of the short haul international market within Southeast Asia, you see, it depends on the route, depends on the market, but, some you certainly have seen over the last 6 months, kind of returning more to the pre-pandemic levels. Others still remaining high or higher than they were. But one has to keep in mind that costs are higher these days. So if we did see a return to pre-COVID yields and airfares, which is, I think, what a lot of the consumers and tourism authorities, for example, in the region want, Airlines wouldn't be able to make money. As it is, in a lot of the markets in Southeast Asia, the yields were very low pre-COVID, unsustainably low. The competition was very high. It was good for consumers, but it was bad for airlines. A lot of airlines, weren't making money, or the margins were very thin. But if we went back to that, it would even be worse now because costs are much higher. So it's kind of unrealistic to think that we will ever see kind of fares at that levels again. The question is, you know, where will it settle down? I think as more capacity and competition comes in the market, it certainly will come down to some extent, you know, quite significantly in some markets. But, you know, I personally, you know, wouldn't want to see the yields come down to what they were pre-COVID, because that would be a bad thing for the industry. And everybody needs a sustainable aviation industry. We have to be here for the long term. We can't have casualties or significant number of casualties, because that just means, you know, people start, you know, having issues traveling. We see a significant number of airline collapses or something like that.
Yeah, so following on what you just said there about the higher yields and the lower yields and the costs, and referencing back to what you said earlier about three of the markets haven't had a full domestic recovery yet, are those elements linked?
Yes, certainly. So if you look at the three domestic markets that are not fully recovered, which is, you know, Malaysia, Indonesia, and Thailand, and I should caveat that I've been talking about the five main domestic markets. Vietnam, Philippines being fully recovered, and those three not being fully recovered, because the other ones in Southeast Asia are very small. So those are the five main domestic markets. But to answer your question, it is somewhat linked, because what happened is if we saw capacity recover in those three markets, you know, to 100% of 2019 levels, fares would have to come down in order to stimulate the traffic, because once you get to those last 20% or so, it's a price sensitive market. It's you'd have to have a significant reduction in fares in order to basically fill up those seats. And airlines, of course, don't necessarily want to do that. They sometimes are forced to do that, you know, when there's a lot of new competition or new entries come in, or somebody adds a lot of capacity and the other airline has to react. That's what naturally happens. But I mean, overall, airlines, of course, would prefer not for that scenario not to happen, because in order for the full domestic recovery to occur in these markets, you would need a significant reduction in the airfare to fill those extra seats, just because of the price sensitivity of the consumers in these markets. And that in turn would reduce the fare to below cost. In fact, these domestic markets were generally not profitable already pre-COVID. In fact, with the exception of Indonesia, I would say, you know, if we went back to those levels, you know, it would be even harder this time because costs are higher. So there's a natural tendency to try to avoid that if at all possible. I should add in one more thing about Indonesia, is that the peak in Indonesia was 2018. So when I talk about like 20% reduction, in the domestic market for Indonesia, I compare it to 2018, while for the other two, I compare it to 2019. In Indonesia, there was a significant contraction in 2019 as the airfare went up significantly, and there was more rationality in the market, and domestic airlines were profitable in 2019. But if you look at 2017, 2018, there was a lot of capacity in domestic Indonesia, and the airlines were not profitable, but the volumes were higher.
Right. So let's broaden out the discussion to the Asia Pacific region, and let's look at the airport structures. You recently posted about the recovery rates, I think it was of the five busiest airports in Asia Pacific. And of course, not all of those will be in Southeast Asia. Talk us some of those key points about the big airports. And again, you know, we've seen variable recovery rates simply because Southeast Asia opened before Northeast Asia, some of these reasons. Just talk us through what you're currently seeing on that.
Yeah, so I mean, no surprise, you know, that the North Asian airports, have recovered slower just because they started later. Southeast Asia, the numbers are generally higher, and South Asia as well, you know, which is in terms of the subregions, South Asia is like fully recovered in terms of international traffic. So the main airports there are fully recovered as well. So I mean, in terms of the top five, and if you look at the top five international airports, currently are Singapore, Seoul, Bangkok, Hong Kong, and Taipei. And then to get to Kuala Lumpur, for example, that would be number six overall in Asia, but that would be another one in Southeast Asia. And the if you look at pre-COVID, Hong Kong was at top, but you know, they still have a ways to go. For the year last year, they were only 55% recovered. In January, they were only 64% recovered. So they still have a ways to go, and they're currently number four instead of number one. Singapore and Seoul have been kind of neck and neck in recent months. Singapore was above Seoul for the first kind of year and a half after the reopening. And recently, Seoul has overtaken Singapore, at least for some months. It depends on the month. They have different kind of seasonality, these two markets. But overall, for this year, Seoul is will most likely be the largest international airport in Asia, and followed by Singapore, and then Hong Kong and Bangkok. Hong Kong will come up. You know, Hong Kong continues to rebuild, and they have quite high expectations for you know, by the end of the year to come close to full recovery or even have a full recovery.
One of the markets that binds the whole region together, Asia Pacific, Northeast Asia, Southeast Asia, of course, is China. A lot of speculation at the moment about the Chinese outbound recovery in this second year after the first year of reopening in 2023. It was a little bit slower, perhaps, than some people expected. I was looking at the Civil Aviation Administration of China forecast that international capacity will be around about 80% by the end of this year compared to what it was in 2019. So that's only, you know, it's still not going to be anywhere near where it was. What are some of the key themes that you'll be watching out for in the coming months regarding China?
With China, it's, of course, the overall figure is one figure. And then, you know, the Southeast Asia figure is another, because, you know, you have markets like the U.S., which are significantly down because of geopolitical issues. And even when in Southeast Asia, there's massive variation. You have like Singapore, China, for example, which is nearly fully recovered or fully recovered, at least some months recently in terms of capacity, while other markets are way down, like Cambodia probably being the most extreme one, but Thailand and some of the other major markets are also significantly down from China still. And in terms of traffic, I mean, China actually has picked up in recent months. January and February are particularly strong. International traffic by the Chinese carriers in January was 72% of 2019 levels, you know, which is a significant improvement even compared to the latter parts of last year. So it is encouraging. February, by all accounts, the figures are not, there's no figures, traffic figures available, but by all accounts, it was, you know, a pretty strong Chinese New Year period out of China. Not like it was in, you know, pre-COVID, but still, it was really the first Chinese New Year after COVID, because last year's Chinese New Year was just after the reopening. So people weren't really ready to travel yet, and the flights were not in place, and it kind of caught everybody by surprise when they reopened at the beginning of last year. So this Chinese New Year was very robust. I mean, and you know, relatively speaking, including for Southeast Asia. But what I'm really looking at it is the off peak months. That is the real kind of telling story. I think you know, when the figures come out for February, there will be a lot of hype on how well China performed, including for some of the Southeast Asian countries. But the real story really will be for, in terms of the full year and particularly how the off-peak periods go. So if you look at like the end of last year, for example, November, October were very weak for Southeast Asia, but in China and just China overall, but particularly for Southeast Asia, where we saw like a reduction in the Chinese passenger numbers compared to earlier in 2023. And so you have this massive demand during the peak periods, and a unusually low demand during the off-peak periods. Now, of course, there's always seasonality in these markets, and you know, even pre-COVID, you had pretty significant differences between holiday periods and non-holiday periods. But the difference seems to be bigger than it was pre-pandemic, which is a little bit of a concern, you know, going forward, because you know, if there's a lot of empty flights, then airlines have trouble maintaining the capacity. In fact, some airlines like AirAsia actually reduced capacity to China in this, you know, in this October, November timeframe last year, after initially kind of putting in too much capacity into the market. Then they came back in Chinese New Year with that capacity they had pulled out, did well. But the question is can they keep that capacity post Chinese New Year, or will the demand, you know, weaken like we saw in October of November of last year? So we need to wait several months to see how this pans out. One of the reasons why we really have to wait and see is there's a very late booking curve now for China. It used to be, you know, that Chinese passengers would book more in advance. That partly could be because of visas. Now, as we know, so many of these Southeast Asian countries have visa free. They've all kind of matched each other. So there's no need to get that visa ahead of time or plan ahead of time. But also just the way travel patterns are generally in China and globally to some extent, with people kind of booking at the last second. And this makes it difficult for airlines to plan capacity and really know how things are going, but also kind of makes it hard for me to predict how things are going to pan out this year. There's certainly something to keep an eye on in terms of next several months, the off-peak months, and whether we see a lot of last second bookings to kind of fill those seats, or whether we still see empty flights and low yields. And surprisingly, in October, November last year, we had a lot of empty flights between Southeast Asia and China. Load factors were lower than normal. I mean, I know tourism authorities like to say there's not enough capacity and more flights are the key, but in that case, it was demand. The flights were empty. So we need to look at this demand, and maybe we need to try to stimulate this demand during off-peak period somehow.
Yeah, it's a good point you mentioned there about, is this a general trend in China? It's, of course, as you said, it impacts the planning for airlines, also for OTAs and hotels as well. They're having the same problem. You speak to them about the booking windows, which were always quite short in China anyway, but have certainly become much, much shorter during that pandemic period where everybody was terrified that they wouldn't be able to actually take their holiday because the city would get closed down, or their flight would be canceled or something like that. Before we finish, Brendan, let's move on to another of the major pillar markets in this region, one that we've been hearing a lot about over recent years, particularly in that kind of travel industry desire to rebalance and not focus quite so much on China. And that's, of course, India. What's the realistic assessment of the outlook for the Indian market in the near term?
Yeah, well, I mean, India is a fantastic market, and from an opportunity perspective, there's no denying that. It's a fantastic domestic market opportunity, and it's a fantastic international market on quite a low base, including for Southeast Asia. There's a massive amount of attention on India in the last year, with all the, particularly the Indian carriers, kind of upping their game, placing all these aircraft orders, which are for both the domestic market and for the international market, where they have quite a small or weak market share, as they, the foreign airlines have always kind of dominated the international market in India, particularly from a wide body perspective. So this attention is just, it's definitely the market to watch. And the whole ecosystem in India, I would say, is gearing up for this. The ecosystem, meaning like airport infrastructure, pilot training, manpower, all that is all ready to support a doubling of the Indian kind of market over the next decade, and that's what the Indian carriers are expecting. They are expecting the market to double to about, which would be about 300 million domestic and 60 million international passengers by the end of this decade, compared to last year's figures. And last year it was fully recovered, unlike a lot of other markets. Again, they're one that has fully recovered and have had domestic growth as well. But let's put this in context. Even if the market doubles, it's not China. So, China, had a massive growth in the decade prior to the pandemic, where, the market essentially tripled in size, not doubled in size, but tripled. And of course, on a higher base. So in that decade, you had an additional 400 plus million passengers, while in India, if it doubles, you have, maybe an additional 200 million passengers. And most of that is domestic. The international gain is only 30 million, and only some of that 30 million gain will end up in Southeast Asia. So it's very important, but it's not, if say China doesn't grow in the next decade, stagnates, which is a possibility. First of all, we need to get China back to where it was pre-COVID. But I mean, even when that happens, it's never going to grow like it did prior to the pandemic, particularly for Southeast Asia, China market. But, just generally speaking, the international market in China, there might be more domestic travel in China going forward. But look, once we get back China to pre-COVID levels, if that happens, we're not going to see the growth. And then everybody expects kind of India to take over that growth. But it's not realistic for India to take over that void. It's only realistic for India to take over kind of a relatively small portion of that. So we need to further diversify, not only rely on India, but rely on a whole basket of different markets to kind of fill that China void. Again, from a growth perspective, I mean, assuming China gets back fully, which is an assumption just from a growth perspective, you know, what drives the growth in Southeast Asia over the next 10, 20 years, India will be part of it. But we need another basket of countries and source markets, basically.
Yeah, that's interesting. We've got a couple of minutes left. I just want to just extend on that point a little bit. We talked about China there and India and those that diversification, which everybody really needs to do. Everybody's talking about. You look at Middle Eastern markets. I know you've worked a lot in Central Asian markets. Are these the ones that, you know, we can expect probably stronger growth in throughout the rest of this decade?
Well, certainly Central Asia on a very low base is going to grow. Central Asia was the first region globally, or first sub-region, I should say, it's a quite a small sub-region, to recover fully. And it's currently, you know, 50% above 2019 levels in terms of international traffic. Some, but only a very small fraction of that's Southeast Asia. There's a lot of flows to the Middle East. There's flows to Russia, which is still open, you know, so only we are seeing increasing number of flights between Central Asia and Southeast Asia. Air Asia, for example, launching later this month to Almaty, Vietjet now also in the region, Batik Air also in the region, and also more Central Asian carriers in Southeast Asia, but it's pretty small. But certainly there's going to be, you know, good growth in that front. You know, Thailand, visa-free to Kazakhstan has driven, you know, great growth from Kazakhstan, but I mean, for as a source market for Thailand, but again, it's relatively small compared to India or China or any of the other major source markets. So that will help, but to only a certain extent. I think Australia, there's certainly, you know, Australia has been a very strong market, you know, particularly for Bali. It's resilient, it's come back, but, you know, growth prospects, you know, are relatively modest, and Australia being more of a mature market. Other North Asian markets certainly have potential. Everybody would like to see more Japanese travel again. It just hasn't happened. You know, we talked a lot about China, but actually Japan is kind of more this almost a slower outbound market now than even China to some extent, although a very hot destination for people to go there. It's quite weak outbound. Korea was the first one to recover, you know, outbound, including into Southeast Asia, but has slowed down in recent months. You know, so it's not really necessarily a growth market, but it's certainly one that's recovered fully and has grown somewhat. And then regionally in Southeast Asia as well, we have an opportunity for more regional travel within Southeast Asia. So it's hard to really name one market, I guess. But I mean, all these markets have potential. Central Asia being probably the biggest potential in terms of a growth perspective, but just quite small.
Fascinating stuff. Brendan, thanks for being so generous with your insights. We've covered a lot of ground there. And personally, where are you going to be traveling to over the coming months? Are you going to be in the air very much?
Yeah, I'll be back in Kazakhstan, ironically, in April. So that's my next kind of trip that I planned. I've just done a lot of, well, not a lot, but at least some regional travel. I've gotten back to Kuala Lumpur, back to Thailand, back to Philippines, back to Cambodia, and just in the last few months. And it's great to kind of see how things are going regionally. I mean, most of these places are, you know, have a buzz about them. They're back to normal, with the exception of Siem Reap in Cambodia, which is kind of scarily quiet still, obviously, with the Chinese influence. But I look forward to getting back to the rest of the region as well and seeing how things are going. I think that, you know, there's a lot of interest in travel in the region, and most of the places I've been to have been quite busy and have a buzz going. But if you look at the figures, I always caution, we're still not quite there yet in terms of a full recovery, and it will be another year. I don't think this year will be a full recovery this year either, so next year we'll be back finally, and hopefully we'll start seeing growth. But there's a lot of factors out there, that including environmental sustainability and other issues that we haven't had time to talk about today. But, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty out there in the market. And I look forward to coming back on the show soon and discussing some of those other issues.
Yeah, for sure. Those are some issues that we said the other day we wouldn't have time to pack in this time, but we'll definitely do next time. Brendan, thank you very, very much for joining us again. Thanks for that fly around Asia Pacific, not just in Southeast Asia. It was great to chat with you again.
Thank you.
So many thanks to Brendan for joining me and sharing his insights. We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and don't forget to send us your thoughts and your comments on anything I discussed with Brendan or anything that we missed out. Drop us a message on our LinkedIn page, the Southeast Asia Travel Show. And as always, you can catch up with the Southeast Asia Travel Show's full back catalog on our website, the seasiatravelshow.com. And you can find us on any international podcast platform. So that's a wrap for today. Hannah will be back next week, and we look forward to talking more Southeast Asian travel and tourism with you again soon.